Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 7th chapter, The Killing of the Demon Trinavarta, text number 16. Gavaha Sarva Gunopeta Vasaha Shrak Rukma Malini Atmaja. One second here, that's a big one. Atmaja Abhyudaya Artaya Pradate Cha Anvayunjata Gavaksarvagunopeta Vasashragrukmamalini Atmaja Abhyudayartaya Pradatte Chanvayunjata Gavaha Cows Sarvaguna Upeta. Being fully qualified by giving sufficient milk, etc. Vasaha, well dressed. Shrak, with flower garlands. Rukmamalini, and with garlands of gold. Atmaja Abhyudaya Artaya. For the purpose of his son's affluence. Pradat. Gave in charity. Te, those brahmanas. Cha, also. Anvaya yunchataha, accepted them. Translation and purport. Nanda Maharaj, for the sake of the affluence of his own son Krishna, gave the brahmins cows fully decorated with garments, flower garlands, and gold necklaces. These cows, fully qualified to give ample milk, were given to the brahmanas in charity. And the Brahmins accepted them and bestowed blessings upon the whole family, especially upon Krishna. Purport. Nanda Maharaj first fed the Brahmins sumptuously and then gave them in charity first-class cows, fully decorated with golden necklaces, garments, and flower garlands. We're also going to read 17. Vipra mantra vido yuktas tairyak proktas tata shishaha ta nishfala bhavishyanti na kadachit api sputam. The Brahmins, who were completely expert in chanting the Vedic hymns, were all yogis fully equipped with mystic powers. Whatever blessings they spoke were certainly never fruitless. Purport. Brahmins fully qualified. Brahmins fully qualified with the Brahminical qualifications are always yogis fully powerful in mystic yoga. Their words never fail. In every transaction with other members of society, Brahmins are certainly dependable. In this age, however, one must take into account that the Brahmins are uncertain in their qualifications. Because there are no yogic Brahmins, all jagyas are forbidden. The only jagya recommended in this age is Sankirtan Yagya. Yagya Sankirtana Prayaya Arjanti Hisumedasa Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Yagya is meant to satisfy Vishnu. Yagyartat Karmanon Yatra Loko Yam Karma Bandhana. Because in this age there are no qualified Brahmins. Excuse me. People should perform Yagya by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Yagya Sankirtana Prayaya Arjanti Hisumedasa. Life is meant for Yagya. And Yagya is performed by the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, Nanda Maharaj is giving in charity to the qualified Brahmins cows fully decorated with garments, flower garlands, and gold necklaces. Nanda Maharaj is Krishna's father, and he's very much concerned for the well-being of his son. Thus, he is giving in charity great amounts of wealth and The one ingredient that is most important in wealth is cows. Because if you have cows, you have everything. You can't have cows without land, without grains. So cows are actually the symbol of wealth, of opulence. Therefore, in previous cultures, your wealth was measured in cows. Or in other parts of the world, they then shifted to camels or to horses or elephants. But actually, cows is what was the symbol of wealth. And so, Nanda Maharaj was giving very beautiful cows who were giving milk in charity. Sometimes people think, oh, we have a cow that's not giving milk. Let us give her to Govinda. Govinda likes cows. So, you know, let's give it to the temple. But actually that's cheating, because then the temple, the devotees will have to take care of it and feed it. But the cow is not giving any milk. So it's not really giving a gift in charity. It's more like giving a burden or a liability. Now, of course, in Vedic culture, no one is regarded as a liability, because everybody has a function, everybody has a place. Even cows who cannot give milk, they're maintained because they're part of the Vedic society. Otherwise, if we're only looking for productivity, then we should get rid of all the old people, right? Because what are old people doing, right? They're just taking up space, isn't it? So, and some people are therefore proposing euthanasia, which means let's just get rid of old people. And in this way, you know, more space for the young people. Well, there's a problem there. What is one of the problems? That young people also become old people. And so, so that means basically you want to get rid of everybody. And if you don't have old people who have been through life, who have experience, then the young people will just do what young people do, stupid stuff. And they will not really learn, because you don't live long enough to make all the stupid mistakes. So unless you have old wise people who have been through life, who have experience in life, there's no culture, there is no tradition. If you look from a point of view of productivity, you should also get rid of young people, because young people are also not productive. When they're in school or when they're kids, they're just, you know, just using up space and resources. So basically what we should be doing is we should keep on importing immigrants who are already grown up, who can do the work. Before that, we don't want them. When they're older, we don't want them. We'll get rid of them. So, right, that will be, and that's the model that some countries have adopted. But it's not a really wholesome model. But here we see Vedic culture, which is based on Krishi Goraksha Vanijam, on protecting the cows, the land, and thus everybody's healthy and wholesome and very opulent. So Nanda Baba, he is giving healthy, beautiful cows in charity to the qualified Brahmins. Why? Because he wants to invoke blessings. In Vedic culture, blessings are very important, because they understand that life is not about mechanics. It's not just about the resources, the facilities that you have. Unless you have blessings, nothing works. Have you noticed in your life? Otherwise, why are we chanting all these prayers? Why are we doing all the things that we do? If you just need fat, carbohydrates, and little fiber, well then, just go out and, you know, get your fill of what you think you need. But you still won't be successful. Because this world doesn't work by mechanics. It works by blessings of higher authority. And because Vedic culture recognizes that, so they're either worshipping forefathers or demigods or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom all blessings originate. Everyone else can only give blessings and sanction in regards to the degree that they have been empowered by the Supreme. So of course Nanda Maharaj is completely Krishna conscious, so he wants the blessings of these Brahmins for the protection of his son Krishna. Now you may say, why does Krishna need blessings? Everything originates from him, right? He's God. Huh? But that means you do not understand rasa. Huh? Because Nanda Bhava is in Vatsalya Ras. So for him, Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a little boy. And a little boy has to be protected, he has to be blessed, he has to be educated, and he has to be well cared for. That is his service to Krishna. And anybody wants to prove something else, that Krishna is the Lord, that Krishna is the Supreme, it doesn't enter into Nanda Baba's ears. He hears none of that. At best, sometimes when Krishna really does outrageously amazing things, he thinks, maybe he's a mystic, maybe he's an empowered person who got a lot of blessings from Narayan. That's about as far as he can think. But then again, Vatsalya Ras takes over and he's like, no, he's my little boy, he's my little child. I have to protect him. I have to make sure he's fine. So he wants to invoke as many blessings as possible, and thus he makes sure that the Brahmins are pleased and that everything goes on nicely. Because the Brahmins, their blessings never go in vain. And that's what the second verse today is all about, that the Brahmins were expert in chanting Vedic hymns, which means they were educated, not these kind of Brahmins that we have nowadays. And they pretend to do rituals, but actually they don't know what they're doing. And they have to read everything and look up everything, and still they're doing it wrong. Not those kind of Brahmins. They were really qualified. They knew their stuff. And they had the proper attitude. Brahmajanititi Brahmana. A Brahman is supposed to know Brahman. Brahman means the nature of the Supreme and his energies. Vedanta tattvata vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shaptyate. So Brahmana knows Brahman, he knows Paramatma, and he knows Bhagavan. He knows what's what and how to move in this world. And because of his knowledge, what is the result of his knowledge? He's humble. Because he understands, I'm small. And Krishna is big. He doesn't become proud because he has a little bit of knowledge. Sometimes we can see nowadays, we spoke yesterday, Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribir Edamanam Rakpuman, that people who have good birth, beauty, wealth, education, they think, oh, I'm somebody, you know. I come from some respectable place. Like here in the East, where you still have kings, a lot of times people say, you know, we have, our lineage goes back to this king or to this emperor. You ever heard that? It always makes me chuckle. It always makes me smile. Because what's the point? We're all lineage-wise. It's a mixed bag. There are no pure descendants nowadays. And being proud means that we are not really cultured. Because pride is not a sign of a cultured person. Shamodamastapashaucham kshantirarjavamevacha gyanam vigyanam astikyam brahmakarma svabhavajam. The qualities, the characteristics of a Brahman are explained in Bhagavad Gita, 18:42. I was in Pushkar at the camel fair. Again, animals. It was a big, one of the biggest markets. They were previously trading cows, then they switched to camels and horses and buffaloes and elephants and whatever. Hundreds of thousands of people go there for that big festival. And we were there with 12 devotees chanting Hare Krishna, distributing Prabhupada's books. And I walked into a travel agency, and there was some young, good-looking, strong, healthy Rajasthani men there who all wore nice dresses and nice watches. And I tried to give him Bhagavad Gita. And they were very quick to tell me, we're Brahmins. And I said, really? You're Brahmins? Okay. Let's do a little quiz here. So tell me, what are the six activities of the Brahmins? And they said, activities? Brahmins do something? No. Don't you understand? Look, here. Look. We're Brahmins. I say, no, this is 2 paisa, you know, like you got this on the market for 2 cents. This doesn't mean you're a Brahmin. It doesn't mean because you have, you know, a big sikha that you're a big devotee, or because you have a big chadar, or because, you know, you have big wooden shoes, or you have big anything. That's just all external stuff. So they didn't know. So I said, Yajan, Yajan, Patan, Patan, Dana, Pratigraha. So you're Brahmins, you should know Sanskrit. What does it mean? They had no clue. So I gave them the translation that to engage in sacrifice, to engage others in sacrifice, to study, to teach, to accept charity and to give charity. Those are the 6 characteristics of a Brahmin. If you're doing these 6 or any of those 6, there is a chance that you can be a Brahmin. If you're doing none of those, you're not a Brahmin. If you run a travel agency, you're not a Brahmin. At best, you're a Vaishya. Most likely, you're a Shudra. They got a little puzzled. So I said, okay, all right. Okay, we'll give you another chance. What are the characteristics of a Brahmin? They didn't know. I told that verse that I just told. And they didn't know. So I explained it. And one of them is humility. You have to actually be humble. You can't be proud. Because pride is not the sign of a Brahmin. Pride is the sign of a Shudra. A pauper is proud of his penny. You ever seen when somebody is there, they're like, yeah, I got some money now, you know. Like, I'm doing pretty good here, you know. And I know how to get something for nothing. So I'm pretty smart. What does pride mean? Pride means I know, you don't. So I can criticize, chastise, and insult you. And it's okay, because I'm more qualified than you are. But a person who is actually brahminically inclined, they're not interested in chastising or criticizing others. If there is the reason, for the sake of teaching, to make a certain case example, they may do so. But they will do it in a very cultured way. Not in a way how to make people feel bad or hurt them or push them down. Because Brahmins understand that everybody is sensitive in their own way. So then I said, well, obviously it's clear. You don't know what you're talking about. So now I'm going to, as a punishment, I'm going to make you buy one of these books. And for you, because you are very well-to-do gentlemen, it will be just 500 rupees each, you know. We'll make a special discount for you, because you're from Brahmin families. So I gave them each a book and I made them pay for it, you know. And because they have some culture from previous generations, they had to eat the humble pie, the vegan, sugarless, humble pie option, and take the book. The point I'm trying to make is that it's not good enough to just wear things or have a certain hairstyle or be born in a certain family or come from a certain tradition or even live in a temple. There's plenty of cockroaches that also live in temples. And they eat plenty of mahaprasad, you know. And they hear plenty of nice things, but they're still cockroaches. So if we don't upgrade our consciousness, then we will still be stuck in the modes of material nature. But these Brahmins, they knew their thing. So as yogis who are equipped with mystic powers, their blessings are never fruitless. Why are their blessings never fruitless? Because they never speak untruth. They never speak a lie. Thus, Krishna always holds up their word of honor. Because they're so much in tune with Krishna's desire, with Krishna's plan, that if they proclaim something, Krishna will make it truth, make it happen. Because Krishna considers the Brahmins, they're my heart. They're my people. They're my agents. So whenever the Brahmins proclaim something, Krishna wants it to happen. That is a high level, of course. That is a high level. That is not something to be taken cheaply. As the purport explains, in this day and age, unfortunately, there are no qualified Brahmins. because of the degradation of Kali Yuga. Kale Doshani De Rajanasti Eka Mahat Gunat Kirtana Deva Krishna Se Mukta Sangha Prambrajait. This Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. One time I was in Udupi, and Dr. Kamat, he told me, he's an Ayurvedic doctor and professor at Manipal University. He said, you know, Ayurvedic doctors are not good in this age. And I know. I'm one of them and I'm training them. They're not good. And he said, you know, the medicines, they're also not good. And the patients, they're also not good. Because they don't do what we tell them to do. So overall, it's a very bad age. But there is one good thing. That simply, if you chant Hare Krishna, you can go directly to Goloka, to highest place. I said, doctor, are you a Hare Krishna? And he said, of course I'm a Hare Krishna. Because in Udupi, everybody's a Hare Krishna. It's a small city. And every day, every inhabitant of the city practically wants to have darshan of Krishna. So even if they're working jobs and they're doing so many things, at one point in the day, they will take time and rush to the temple. And in front of the deities on the opposite side, there's a little hole in the wall, like this. So people get off of their scooter or their bicycle, and they take off their shoes, and they go there. I'm an idiot. I have to go back to work. Hare Krishna! And they rush back to their shop or to their office. Because they have that affection for Krishna. Very, very wonderful to see. So, the rest of the purport is about this verse 11.5.32. What is 11.5.32? Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangas Pangasaparshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayayar Yajantihi Sumeda Saha. So, this is given in context of the different Yuga avatars, and that in this age of Kali, people who are intelligent, they worship the Supreme Personality Godhead through this process of Harinam Sankirtan, and that Krishna Varnam, Tvisha Akrishnam, that in this age of Kali, Krishna Varnam is black, but Akrishnam, not blackish, namely Gora, Gora Rakta Kalevaram, Krishna came in a golden form, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what was his activity? Yagyai Sankirtana Prayar. He performed Harinam Sankirtan with his associates, Sango Pangasha Parshadam, Sango Upa Anga and Parshada. With his associates, his parts and parcels, and his empowered representatives. So what is Sankirtan? Samyak Kirtan. Samyak means complete, and Kirtan means glorification of the Lord. Who here is a Sankirtan devotee? Good morning. Good morning, Ljubljana. Who here is a Sankirtan devotee? That's about 1.5 people. You see, that's the problem. We think I am a this or a that or the other thing. But that's actually upadhi. That's a wrong designation. If you identify yourself by externals, that's just temporary. We should all feel that we're Sankirtan devotees. Because this is the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? It's still the Sankirtan movement, isn't it? Or have they changed the ideology lately? You never know, you know, like I just come from Central America. They change their ideologies quite rapidly. They go from right to left to whatever. So, if you're chanting Hare Krishna and you're doing something to expand the Sankirtan movement, you're a Sankirtan devotee. But if you think, no, I'm a grihastha, I'm a student, I'm a householder, I'm an old guy, I'm a this, I'm a that. No, that's an upadhi. That's a designation. That's just a package. We should all not just feel, but we should all be engaged in the Sankirtan movement. Why? Paramvijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan, because this is the winning team. Do you want to be part of the winning team? Or you want to be a loser? Huh? No, of course you want to be part of the winning team, right? That's why we sign up with the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, whether you're making flower garlands, cooking the offering, cleaning the floor, doing management, raising kids, or giving people directly a book, it's all connected to the Sankirtan movement. Of course, book distribution is the tip of the spear. It's the tip of the arrow. But we have to also understand, if you only have the tip of the arrow, but you don't have a shaft and you don't have feathers, you don't have much impact. You take a little tip and you throw it. It will not even pierce the skin. Nothing will happen. So if we don't have a community, if we don't have a society of devotees, and we don't have Brahmins, the feathers means direction. Without the feathers, the thing goes nowhere. If we don't have directions, a clear idea where we're going, then it's like shooting in the dark and hoping to hit something, you know? Is that very productive way? Not very productive way, right? Because Brahmins are the head. They're the head, and the head is responsible for vision and for communication. If you don't have these two, you're going nowhere. You may be having a very strong body, but you're not really doing much of value. So, all these social classes, they are interdependent. It's a community. It's a combined effort. And unless we recognize that, we value that, and we develop as a wholesome society, we'll end up with a tip of a spear or with some feathers. But in and of themselves, they're not really that productive. Of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins, because he knew that from Brahmins everything else will come, because Brahmins are visionaries. But Brahmins want to see that all the other castes are flourishing, because otherwise it's not a balanced society. Like in a body, if you have a big head, but no belly or no legs, then you're like, where is this monster coming from, right? What went wrong here? So, in Nanda Maharaj's time, Nanda Maharaj is a Vaishya. They're producing wealth. They're producing opulence. So, how are they doing that? By Krishi Goraksha Vanijam. By cow protection, by agriculture, and by trade. Which also includes banking and all the other kind of trades. And in this way, they create opulence, because only the Vaishyas actually are creating opulence. The Shudras, they're providing service, their labor. And the Kshatriyas, their administrators, their main business is to make sure that the Vaishyas don't kill everybody. Because when Vaishyas are not controlled, they do what's called capitalism. Have you heard of capitalism? Yeah? Have you experienced capitalism? I was just in Scandinavia. You go to a gas station, and a liter of water is 7 euros. And you go like, what? You know? What happened? Beer is 3 euros and water is 7. Something went wrong here, right? So, that's Vaishyas who went out of control. And there's no Kshatriyas to regulate them. To say, you're not allowed to do certain things. You can only work within these parameters. And you have to pay your taxes. You can't just sell things that are illegal or poisonous or killing people like that. For that, you need Kshatriyas. And to guide everybody and uplift them, you need Brahmins. You need thinkers. That's why Prabhupada said you should go to schools and universities and share Krishna consciousness. Because we need thinkers. We need visionaries. We need people who have an idea where this whole thing is going. Otherwise, if it's just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I just do what I'm told. Well, what if one day there is nobody there telling you what to do? What are you going to do then? I don't know, exactly. Oh, the internet is down, you know. We can't do nothing today because the internet is down, right? Gurudev is somewhere in South India or somewhere in America or somewhere else. So, you know, if we don't get a signal from the tower, we're just going to do nothing. Jai Shishi Pancha Tattva Ki Jai. But that's not a very productive way how to live life. We should become trained. Sometimes people get a little anxious. Oh, where are all the brahmacharis? Okay, we got a few now from Zagreb, but, you know, as on loan just for today. Thank you for coming all the way. Hare Krishna. Where are they? Well, what happens in a school? People go to school. They get educated. What happens then? Then they graduate. What happens then? Well, then they go out into the world and they do something. Is that a bad thing? No. That's a good thing. That's the normal thing. Yeah. If you have a whole bunch of students who hang around in the university, maybe a couple will become teachers, maybe one or two become administrators, maybe somebody wants to do some gardening or some other kind of work. But the vast majority, they pass out and they go into the world. The wealth of the universities is their alumni, is the people who studied, learned, and moved out into the world, got married, created wealth, and then they said, hey, I learned something, and I would like to support my school, or I would like to support my temple. Why? Because I learned something from them. So then they give charity, endowment funds. The big universities in the world have $1 billion endowment funds, hundreds of millions. It's not by tuition, it's not by selling textbooks or by charging, but it's by people who learned something, who went into the world, became successful, and then gave back. In a similar way, if we want our ISKCON society be successful and flourishing and expanding, we should invest into education and ensure that anybody who comes here actually learns something that will be useful for their life, so they can live a happy, successful, and prosperous life and be Krishna conscious. And then, believe it or not, they will support the temple. Huh? But if we just keep them and think, you have to stay here for your whole life, live here in this building, and we keep on piling more and more people, then it turns like into Kumbh Mela. Have you been in Kumbh Mela? Huh? Or Shanghai train station? I was there once. And there was some technical fault with some signage, so the trains couldn't move. But there's a problem. This is Shanghai. There's 30 million people there. It's the biggest train station in the world. And every minute, hundreds and thousands of people coming into the train station. But the trains are not moving. And you understand? Constipation? Pain? Problem, right? The people were just backing out onto the streets, onto the sidewalks. It was just like a big anthill. And nobody could go anywhere. It was big chaos. So, there has to be, like in Ayurveda, what does the Ayurvedic doctor ask you about your health? He asks one question. What is that question?
Digestion.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. No need to get into details. He just asks you one question, digestion. Because that is the key element. Huh? Digestion, belly. Nanda Baba, Vaishyas, belly. If your digestion is healthy, your system is healthy. If your digestion is not healthy, your system is not healthy. Nowadays, because the Vaishyas are not properly guided, they're not properly enlightened by Brahmins or controlled by Kshatriyas, things are completely out of bounds. And you have people selling things that are really not wholesome, that are really not good. From food, to medicine, to drugs, to all kinds of stuff. So, the Sankirtan Yagya of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the prime benediction at large, for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon, and it gives us a taste for that Golokera Premadana, for that highest gift, that highest taste that we are always been hankering for. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That's what Srila Prabhupada came to give us. But he also came to give us the blueprint of what is proper culture and what is proper organization and what is proper interaction. So if we are actually to read these books that we distribute, we would know what is a Brahmin. We would know what is culture. We would know what is interaction. And we would know what is the highest goal. Huh? And a Brahmin is happy If the Shudra is having his sense gratification, the Vaishya is making his profit, the Kshatriya is having his power and his opulence, because he's a Brahmin. He knows. They need that. Otherwise, they can't function. They don't have their incentive, they don't have their juice, their rasa. They're not going to do their thing. It's not his taste, it's not his cup of tea, as we say. But he's happy that everybody in society has what they need. What does a Brahmin need? He doesn't need anything. Akinchana gochara. He's satisfied simply engaging himself in yajna, in sacrifice. Because that is what gives him taste. That he knows, I am doing the right thing, what is required, to worship the Supreme Personality Godhead, to study and teach, to engage in yajna, and to engage others in yajna. And then also, he will accept in charity. But whatever his access, whatever he's beyond his needs, and his needs are minimal, he gives it away, he distributes it. He's not hoarding. He's not hoarding things. Because he understands the Ishavasya principle. You know the Ishavasya principle? Ishavasya midam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat kena tyaktena bunjita magrida kasasvidanam. Don't take more than your quota. Like you're a brahmachari. You don't need 3 suitcases full of stuff. You don't need 5 of everything. That's grihastha. You have to be satisfied. So if somebody gives you something new, you give away the old thing. You don't hoard. You don't accumulate. Otherwise, it's atyahara. It's over-collection. Now for a grihastha who's got family and children, they have to create some facility and some wealth for their family and also in order to give in charity, in order to function properly. So we have to understand what is our status. Where are we at in life? And then the organizational structure can be healthy. So we shouldn't be scared when we see that there is some mobility. People are moving through the ashrams, people are getting educated, they're moving out, they're productive. But they should feel also that, yeah, I learned something, I received something, and I'm grateful for that, and I would like to reciprocate and render service. So these are some reflections on today's verse. We're here for a couple of days, so we're not going to overdo it. We're going to speak more today about Sankirtan, not just book distribution, but also how to share a message, how to communicate this Golokera Premadana, this highest gift, in an attractive, relevant, and impactful way. Because otherwise we'll end up with a bunch of empty churches, a few old ladies, and one priest who is hugging the mic, who is very anxious that nobody gets close to his church, because it's his church, remember? Have you seen a few places like that? Yes. All over the world. All over the world. Because when we're insecure and territorial, or proud, or just plain ignorant, then we act out of fear. Bhayam dutiya biniveshatasya adisha dapitasya vipariyo smriti. That fear arises. You know that verse? It's a good verse. Fear arises when you see something as separate from Krishna. Then you become fearful. Oh, he's going to take something from me. Oh, you know, all these foreigners are coming to Slovenia. What are they going to do? They're going to take our jobs and our women. Right? And the nationalists, they revolt. Same stuff everywhere. Same story. Oh, all these people are coming. They want to take our position. They want to usurp our power, our control. Fear-based religion is always popular for ignorant people. In the Middle Ages, people were mostly governed by fear. If you don't do this, then you will burn. Turn or burn. But intelligent people, they unsubscribe. You know? You know that little box, unsubscribe? When you get promotional emails, spam. You can just unsubscribe, right? You tick that little box so you don't get more of that kind. For every Catholic who joins, six leave the church. You do the math. That's minus five. You get it? That's why they're pumping all the money that they're collecting in the what was first called First World, and now it's called the Old World. They're pumping all those resources into the what was called Third World. Now it's called Developing Countries. And they're conquering remote areas. And there, they're still making a lot of converts. Because there you can still entice people with prosperity religion. You join our group, we'll give you an education, we'll give you a hospital, we'll give you a place, we'll give you. And in this way people say, hey, sure, you give me, I'll join your group. Sure, why not? I mean, it's a good deal, right? Why are so many people converting to Hinduism and Christianity in India? It's not because of the bad Christians and bad Muslims. It's because of the bad Hindus who have been oppressing because of the so-called Brahmins and higher castes who have been exploiting, suppressing, and torturing the lower castes for centuries. That's why so many are leaving. Because if you become a Christian or a Muslim, in one day you become a gentleman. You become a respectable citizen. Because there, everybody is of the same. Hey, I'm a Christian. I'm a Muslim. This seemingly no difference, even though later on they realize that the same game is going on there. Why? Because nobody has a monopoly on stupidity. It's not that one country or one race or one caste has a monopoly on stupidity. We also don't have a monopoly on bhakti. Have you noticed? Every yoga studio on the planet is having kirtan. And some guy is talking about bhakti. They don't know what kirtan and bhakti is, but they're doing it. Why? Because it's a selling product. All the big slaughterhouse and meat packaging processing companies now are switching to, they're investing billions into what? Plant-based food. Why? Because it's big business. If I'm losing here, I got to gain here. So they just shift. And they have the same exploitation, the same idea. So basically not much changed. Unless we educate, first of all, ourselves, and then our circle, the people who are in our vicinity, and then the public, nothing's going to change. It's going to stay the same. So we're going to talk a little bit about what is the Sankirtan movement, how to expand the Sankirtan movement. And this is a very nice place. You know that this place was actually purchased and paid off by book distribution. And that's why it's still here. Because it was done in the right way. Whereas many of the other places that we got by, I'm not going to mention what happened and how we got them, a lot of those places are gone. And the money is gone, and the people who did it are gone. But here, the project is safe and secure because devotees did it in the right way. They did what they were supposed to do. Educate people, share the message, give people books, treat them nicely. And it's wonderful to see how still so many intelligent people come here and learn the practice of Krishna consciousness. And then go out into the world and make a difference. When I started in the early 80s, you talk about yoga, meditation, vegetarianism, people go, what? Yoga? You mean yogurt, right? Yogurt. No, yoga. They had no clue about nothing. And today, all these things are mainstream. Every movie, every book, every script, everybody talks about that. Now you have to do something a little more radical, a little more drastic, if you want to get people's attention. What is that little more drastic thing? I was in Guanajuato, Mexico. And I approached a gentleman, and he wore a three-piece suit. You know what a three-piece suit is? It's the pants, the jacket, the coat, the cravaton, everything. He had big rings, nice shoes, a cane, a hat, a golden pocket watch, and a handlebar mustache. You know what a handlebar mustache is? Like this, like Salvador Dali, you know? And before I could say anything, he asks me, "What are you trying to do?" And I was like, "What am I trying to do? That's a good question." So he beat me to the chase. So what do you say when you don't know what to say? Have you ever been in a situation where you didn't know what to say? He's an aristocratic person. He looked like a lawyer or a politician or some old businessman. Huh? So what do you say when you don't know what to say?
You ask back.
Huh?
You ask me the question.
No. You pray to Krishna. Krishna, I need a miracle. Huh? This person is beyond my pay grade. You know, he's above my level of capacity. So I need something right now. I need help. So I looked him in the eye and I said, "I'm trying to develop humility and introspection through selfless service." He looked at me and he said, humility, introspection, through selfless service. And he was, humility, introspection, through selfless service. He said it twice. He said, "How much is your book?" People don't care how much you know. People don't care how little you sleep and eat. People want to see, do you have good character? They want to see, are you humble? Are you patient? Are you kind? That is what they see. The rest they don't see. Because there's too much noise in their head, you know? But because Krishna is in their heart, when Krishna sees that, hey, this is a Brahmin, Krishna wants your word to become true. So he will inspire that person to reciprocate. Just like he's inspiring these Brahmins to give blessings that are truthful. Because, why? Because they're Krishna's people. Their only goal is to be an instrument of Krishna's plan. To be entheos. Enthusiasm. What does it mean? Entheos. To be guided by God. To be inspired by God. Or to be possessed by God. Would you like to be possessed by God? Huh? Would be nice, right? Huh? Means no separate desire, no separate agenda. I just like to be an instrument of God's compassion. And that's why Krishna makes the Brahman's words come true. That's why even though Sringi was a kid, but because he came from a very powerful family, when he uttered that curse, it was powerful. It was a fact. So we should be careful in how we use our words and our language. Because words have meaning. And they have impact. And we know that sharp words are lodged in the heart. And they are more painful than if an arrow pierces you. Because the arrow, you can take it out. And then, you know, the wound heals. But if somebody says something that is very pointed, that is very offensive, it will stay for a very long time. And next time you see that person, you go like, you know. So these are some reflections on today's verse. One question? Yes. Yeah.
Regarding the Brahmanas giving directions, taking care of other Varnas, I heard one saying, Brahmanas, because of this kind of analytical thinking, they are not doing much, like practically. They are just kind of giving guidance, but they need Kshatriyas that will facilitate their instructions and ideas. Would you comment on this?
Yeah, it's the same thing like saying the brain or the eyes or, you know, or the mouth or the ears, they don't do much. They're just there. Like, you know, in the analogy, but if you don't have your faculties, you're not really that functional. You may have had experience. You lost your sense of smell, or you lost your hearing, or, you know, or you had problems seeing something. Then your ability to do things becomes very much compromised. Now, to say just because there is not seemingly so much activity doesn't mean that nothing is happening. Just like if you have a big boat, a big ship, the rudder is a very small part of the boat. You know the rudder? But without it, you're not going anywhere. So the tongue is compared to a rudder. So depending on how you speak, what you speak, and what you eat, your direction in life is being determined. So it's not about volume or quantity or amount of energy that's being exerted. But it's really about sense of direction, sense of purpose, because that defines the impact. Otherwise, you'll be shooting in the dark and very, very little result. And that's what we're seeing nowadays, because it's a headless society. So even though there is so much so-called economic development and productivity, but there's so much waste, there's so much abuse, there's so much pollution, there's so much negative effect that's coming from all of that. Because we haven't learned how to live properly in harmony with ourselves, with community, with nature. And that's why we have all these situations that are going on right now. That you have to be careful. Can I drink this water? Can I eat this? Can I touch this? Or will it kill me? Why? Because the head was not doing its job properly. And that's why the Kshatriyas, when the Brahmins became corrupted, then the Kshatriyas got out of hand and became degraded. And then the Shudras and the Vaishyas, they revolted and they got rid of the Kshatriyas and they got rid of the kings. and then everything just turned into peasants, just people not basically knowing how to manage and how to move. Does that satisfy your question? Yes. This is the bonus question. I realize we're going over time here.
You were mentioning the verse describing the qualities of the Brahmans. I was going through the verse in my mind. Maybe I missed something, but there is humility. It's not there. And it was a bit strange. Why is not there?
Because humility is all throughout. All of these are a sign of humility. Shama, Dhamma. Arjavam, Gyanam, Vigyanam. Not just knowledge, but realized knowledge. When you learn something, the result is you should become humble. You realize something that, you know. So, of course, in other lists, humility is there. Diksha Karunikasa. There's many lists. But it's all throughout. Brahman is humble because he knows. Only an ignorant person is proud. You have to be ignorant. Otherwise, how can you be proud? Sometimes people get upset. They learn a little Sanskrit and they go through verses and they say, "Hey, I found a fault. Prabhupada is putting something in his translation that's not there in the Sanskrit. I caught him doing. Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam." Translation is not about linguistics. It's not about just knowing a language. You have to know the meaning, the intention. Why did the author write this? What was his purpose? What is his external reason? What is the internal reason? What is the message? Otherwise, you'll just translate words. Like if you translate words literally, oftentimes they make no sense whatsoever. You know, no need to give you too many examples. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santaksadaiva Ridayeshu Viloka Yanti Yamshyama Sundaramachintya Gunaksvarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamahambajami. Unless we see through the eyes that are anointed with prema, with the salve of love of Krishna, we can't really see what's what. We'll always get it wrong. We think the Brahmins are a bunch of parasites. They're just a bunch of beggars. Useless people. We should get rid of the intellectuals. Anybody who has glasses here, will just get rid of them. They did that in the past. In some places. It didn't work too great for those places, but that's what they did. Or anybody who has some capacity, everybody who is an administrator, everybody has some power, we get rid of them. Or anybody who has some wealth, we have to get rid of them. But it didn't work so great. History tends to repeat itself. That's why we should study history and learn from it. And that's why we're here, reading the Bhagavatam. Because this is the big history. The big history of Krishna and his associates and how to actually become part of Krishna's plan. And that is what we see here, and Nanda Maharaj is very wonderfully demonstrating how to live this Krishna conscious culture. Thank you for your kind attention. Granta Rachimad Bhagavatam Ki.